Sick of being upsold at gyms?
My guy, you're currently a base member. For $90 more, I can upgrade you to our Shred membership. For $130 more, you'll be a swole member. And for just $300 more, you'll reach Sweat Platinum.
At Planet Fitness, you'll get energy without the upsell. Never pushy, always free fitness training and equipment for every workout. It's fitness that fits your budget. Join Planet Fitness for just $1 down and $10 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, May 10th. See Home Club for details.
Hey, welcome to Comedy Album Book Club. I'm your host, Jason DeLine, an actor and comedy enthusiast here in Toronto. And this podcast is the podcast where we listen to a comedy album that is either revered or hated or rare or influential or something like that. And we talk about it with some comedy peeps. Today, we have the album I'm Telling You for the Last Time by Jerry Seinfeld. This was recorded. It was streamed live on HBO as it was recorded August 9th, 1998 at the Broadhurst Theater on Broadway in New York. And then the VHS and DVD came out a year later. There are some discrepancies between the video show and the audio that you can get on Spotify, etc. But it's basically the same thing. It was recorded a couple of months after Seinfeld went off the air. It was really recent after that. Jerry Seinfeld was born in 1954 in Brooklyn, New York. He's 64 years old now. He has a degree in communications and theater from Queens College. He started doing stand-up in 76 at the age of 22. His first Letterman appearance was in 81 at the age of 27. He, of course, had the big hit TV show Seinfeld with Larry David that he says was based off of the Abbott and Costello show. Partly there were some influences from there. In 1993 he had a special called Stand Up Confidential, and then he did this one, and he did another one called Jerry Before Seinfeld. So he's only really done three specials that we have videos of. He was also in The Marriage Ref. He was a creative force behind that. Didn't work out too well. And he apparently has a net worth of $950 million. He's doing very well. And of course, he also does Comedians in Cars Getting Coffee. That's enough about Jerry Seinfeld. We also have a few guests in the studio today. Of course, I have my producer with me, Matthew Ardill, comedy nerd and great producer. How are you, sir?
Good, thanks.
Good to hear. I'm great. Good. I'm very excited to be talking with the two gentlemen we have here today. One of them is a stand-up comedian and a sketch comedian. He's in the sketch troupe Vest of Friends. He's also on the podcast Vest of Friends and hosts an open mic for stand-ups first and third Thursday of every month at Another Bar. It's supposed to be a fun loosey-goosey, I think is what he said.
Did you write that down?
No, I remember that. Ladies and gentlemen, Mark
Hallworth.
Mark Hallworth.
Yeah, thanks, man.
How are you, Mark?
Good, man. You were talking about Seinfeld like he was going to show up. You were like, he's here today.
Wouldn't that be a great
That'd
surprise?
That'd be insane.
And here he isn't.
Couldn't find parking.
The other voice you just heard here is a comedian, and he hosts a show. Was it the first or second Tuesday?
Yeah, yeah. They just have scheduling stuff.
Comedy Bar. At Comedy Bar. It's called Pay What You Can't. Please welcome Chili Davidson.
Hi, great to be here.
Great to have you here. And your favorite movie is Clifford with
one of Martin my favorites.
Okay, you're backpedaling a little bit. I think you said before it was your favorite.
I would say it's like number two or three for sure.
What are your top
number
three?
Number one's gonna be some Chevy Chase thing.
Number one is the first Vacation film.
Oh wow.
Solid number one.
Yeah. Maybe like Raiders of Lost Ark or something is in there.
Okay,
too.
We took a left turn there. Okay. I'm following the pattern.
No, Clifford Raiders Vacation with Chevy and then Chase.
The Chevy Chase
Raiders.
Yeah, before it bombed.
They're like, oh, he's a little goofy. Little
yeah,
smart.
Fun
ass.
Though. Fun idea.
Yeah. It's like Fletch, basically.
Do you like any of the other Vacation movies?
Yeah, I like them all. Honestly, except for like the new one and the Eddie one. But I do like them all. I definitely think that Vegas is the worst if you haven't seen the others. There's like funny moments in it if you like the rest of the series and you're like, oh, like, that's funny. Like the part where he climbs the Grand Canyon is actually hilarious to me.
I actually laugh.
Or not the Grand Canyon.
The Hoover Dam. I kind of laugh at those stupid dam jokes too that Brian Doyle Murray does.
Randy Quaid.
Well, Randy Quaid says, "Is this a goddamn?" But the guide at the Hoover Dam is Brian Doyle Murray.
Is it?
Yeah, Bill Murray's brother.
Wait, he's in the first one, the Christmas one.
I don't know.
Yeah, he's in the Christmas one. Yeah,
he's also
he plays
in
multiple characters.
Oh,
yeah.
I have to check on because I'm a big Brian Doyle Murray fan.
Ask all the damn questions you want. I'm your damn guide, and then. So they make all these great damn jokes, but then, yeah, Randy Quaid says, "Is this a goddamn?" And everyone just stares at him.
Chevy,
terrible.
Chevy goes, Eddie.
Yeah.
Have you ever seen Beavis and Butthead Do America? They use that
a
joke
long
in that
time
movie,
ago.
Too.
Yeah, they do, don't
he's
they?
He's like, "I got a question. Is this a goddamn?" And all the people are like, all the like old folks that they're on the tour bus with just walk away from them. They're like, you know, goddamn.
Wonder who did it first. Who did the joke first?
Beavis and Butthead movie may have done that first. I think it's older than
Vacation.
I can't imagine
right.
that Vegas Vacation originated a lot of jokes.
Like, I mean, that's not a great joke anyway.
Yeah. The first Vacation to me is like a pretty close to perfect comedy in terms of like comedic character, the storyline. Like it just kind of works out that it's like it follows all the patterns. Like the other Chevy Chase movies like Fletch and stuff shouldn't really work as a comedy, but Vacation is like the perfect comedic character of like the idiot who's like very optimistic or whatever. Right. Like,
yeah. So, so we had talked about doing this album. We talked about doing Seinfeld, but I think Mark, it was actually your suggestion to do this.
Probably, yeah,
yeah.
It's and, probably the special I know the most.
Right, and you suggested Chili be on.
Oh yeah, because I knew Chili would know
Chili's
everything
a huge
about this.
Fan.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
So I'll put it to both of you then. Like, Mark, what makes you dig this album, man?
Oh man, what a crazy umbrella question. I don't know. It's
well,
funny,
okay.
I guess. Like,
it's fine. Well, you could have chosen any album, basically. So why'd you choose this?
Well, I think
one?
It would be one that I just know it inside and out, really,
okay.
in terms
you
of
you watched
like,
it a million times.
I didn't watch it a million times. It was cool. Yeah, I listened to it. So it was cool to watch it today with you guys. If
yeah,
the audience needs
it.
To know. Yeah.
Yeah, we watched
it. And it was great to hear the dynamics and stuff. And another a cool thing about this, and I'd be curious to get your input on this, Chili, too, is that. He doesn't really have like a closer. He just sort of ends. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
He's just like, bye. Like, but Seinfeld's always been that guy. Cause he talks about this all the time too, about, he's like appreciative of like timing where it's like, you got to quit early and have people think that there will be more. And so people are like, ah, damn it. If there's only like another 5 minutes. Come on.
Interesting.
Rather than go 10 minutes too long.
Cause, well, a lot of comedians, it feels like they end on their best thing, right? Like,
yeah, it sounds like a story that has been crafted for a long time.
Yeah,
you know,
and huge laugh at the end, right? Like a big, or maybe a big callback or something.
Yeah,
but
it
feels like he peaks early in this. Special.
Well, I think all the peaks too are sort of unique. Like the visual special that we watched today, the laughs are different than the audio one,
right?
And so it's
sweetened for the audio as well. Sometimes,
sure,
like,
yeah, for HBO
but,
or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so it's kind of hard to tell. Like, it's funny. There's one I can't remember that we just watched, a joke that gets a big pop that he has to pause for and wait. Something about men and women. It's in that bit. It's in the whole men and women chunk. I don't know.
The wedding one, maybe? The
It's always so big.
Oh, yeah, the tuxedo.
Yeah,
we dress them all the same. Or they're all the same anyways. Well, we dress them all the same.
So it's
that gets a huge pop in the video that doesn't happen in the audio. Because
I think
one.
They filmed it on two separate nights. Like, it's
I'm
all
sure
the same.
Must be,
but they must have filmed them on two. Because the special is live. So maybe either the night before as rehearsal or... I feel like you would have done it the night before because it's crazy to go from live to be like, let's just do that.
You'd
again.
Think so, yeah. And that's very common with albums too, right? Is to do two shows and then you pick what you like better.
Yeah,
sometimes
it'd be risky as shit to do one or whatever.
Oh, yeah.
George Carlin's.
Live specials are so rare. The last one they did was the Brian Regan one. I think that's the last one live at Radio City Music Hall.
Is that
they
right?
don't think they do live albums anymore because what a risk.
It'd be an insane risk.
It would be a thrill for sure.
Absolutely.
Like,
yeah.
I mean, it's like Saturday Night Live is the only show like they do that's like live anymore. That's why like 30 Rock and these shows started to do these because it's like what it's you know backups and you see it in this special.
Oh yeah, it's wild.
One of the cool things about this special I do think, and I didn't realize this when I first watched it because I was so young, is you see him stumble a couple times.
That was a cool thing about watching this today, which not an audio too.
Right,
the audio version aren't.
Like, what's interesting too is that it doesn't throw him in the least.
No.
You know, he's just such a professional.
Well, I bet you in his head he's like, God damn it!
Oh yeah,
for sure.
Yeah, he's punched a mirror or something.
He's such a polished comedian.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, I was saying before is like his. I think sometimes people's biggest criticism about him is he's completely opposite of some people like Gerard Carmichael or whatever,
right?
Who are one of their things that people like about them is that they're not polished. And Jerry's like the monologue type comedian, like Brian Regan or whoever, was just like.
He also has that sort of vaudevillian showman type style. Like he's just he seems like a comedian's comedian. You know, it's just a very classic presentation. He's got modern sensibilities, wearing a suit, and set up the joke and very observational. I mean, people say he sort of invented it, but he perfected it.
Yeah.
But it seems old fashioned to me. When you see him now,
but I mean, the jokes certainly hold up, which is interesting too.
I'm of a weird camp that I think that I've seen him live a couple times in the last few years, and I think so much of his stuff still plays. I'm disappointed that his recent special didn't include as much of his new stuff, because his new special is like old bits.
Which is a lot weird.
And people are like, "Whoa, he made this special about telling you the jokes for the last time, and then he's going back and telling you old bits." I think he's got a lot of bits that speak to today's culture and world. And like these bits about the cell phone being in your pocket, what's the battery at? Like, you live and die by this phone. Everywhere you're at, you gotta go. It's like, I gotta be somewhere, I gotta go. Like, he's like still doing these things that I do think relate to the world still.
Mm-hmm.
Yet he's like, he did this special with all these old bits, and I'm like, show people that you're not like
that. You've been growing. Yeah. All those Letterman appearances and stuff in the last 10 years or whatever were great. A lot of cool stuff in there.
Yeah.
What I found interesting is like every single, like I recently watched Ellen's last special before the one that she did.
Mm-hmm. That just came out.
Yeah.
Ellen Page?
Ellen DeGeneres.
Is this Here and Now?
Yes.
Oh, yeah. I love that.
And it's like, they're kind of contemporaries. I'd say they're sort of like peaking right around the same time. Like Ellen went off the air in 2001. And so like, she's very much of the style where there's a story, there's an arc to her set. And with Jerry, it's just like, it's like he just took any one of his single appearances at a club. Any one of those bits could have been the entire, like, absolutely, you know, 10 minutes that he did or 5 minutes. So there's no story there. There's just like, okay, this is my one bit.
A million jokes.
Yeah. And he's never been that way.
Yeah,
it's very joke dense.
Like, there's no transitions even between a lot of these. Let's
talk about Chinese people.
That's another difference. While we're on the subject, which I think is funnier than what it is in the video. Yeah. Which I was kind of bummed out by. I was like, oh, sorry, that's not there. It also makes the transition a little more logical as to why you would even do that transition. Yeah. Obviously, there's a lot of like racist stuff that doesn't hold up.
There's bits in there that I would never do, but
like what?
Come on.
I wouldn't do the bit about Chinese people, but I also don't think it's like that terrible. Like when he actually gets into it, it's like you pull back and you go, but then it's like, he's like, I respect that they're sticking to this thing.
Yeah,
and
he does say I am impressed.
He's really not, he's dark. But he's not that offensive.
He's just so flippant. It sounds like
whoa.
It sounds a little nastier than it really is, just because of his tone of voice or something.
It's the 90s, so it's the thing. Like, there's just, it doesn't excuse it, but it's just sort of like, I don't think people were just as aware as they are now, we're being a dick.
Even the man and woman stuff too, where like women are looking at me right now thinking I could manipulate you. Right. And like, that even to me felt like something people probably wouldn't say.
But there is some that do, like the stuff about like catcalling. He like actually makes a really strong point.
Sure.
I saw that one recently. He does that on the Seinfeld show. And it's like so funny. I was like, is this the last option? Yeah. Honking the car? Like, what do you expect you're going to do? Jump? Oh, I didn't know he felt this way about me. Like,
that's a good bit.
I think some of the framework of it is like, makes it seem like it's more dated. Like, here's the difference between men and women.
Right.
And it's like, you don't need to frame it that way. Yeah. I always get frustrated when a comedian does that, because sometimes comedians will open bits and be like, here's the thing about the current, you know, Me Too movement.
Right.
And it's like, your joke's not actually that offensive, but you're setting yourself up for failure.
Well, but I remember him talking about that catcalling one. Like, it felt like he wasn't saying, here's why men are idiots. Like, first he was saying, we're just doing this.
Yeah.
Here's some ideas we have. And I kind of like how it almost seems like he's saying this is fine, this is who we are, but then you realize he's subtly taking men down, which I think is pretty great, and he's looping himself in. But what he doesn't do a lot, and what I think what maybe makes me think it's some of it feels dated by today's standards, is I think audiences these days, we've said this before a few times on the podcast, demand more of a personal connection to their comedians. Yeah. They want not just self-deprecating, but actual, like,
and he has none
revealing.
Yeah.
Seinfeld's never been about that.
The closest I got was the Halloween engagement stuff. Joke where he goes, I was engaged once. That was bad.
Yeah.
That's right. Like the closest.
Yeah, but the Halloween stuff. Too. Yeah.
The Halloween
true.
Stuff.
From his life,
but it's
you know
so...
I mean?
Yeah. It's so not vulnerable.
Yeah.
Right. No, no. It's, yeah. That's
you know
true.
What I mean? Like, he never gets vulnerable.
No, and that's an interesting thing.
He always keeps us at a distance.
Like, but he is, I think one of the bit, John Mulaney once made a great point, which is like, people don't realize how dark Seinfeld is. Like, there's like all those horse jokes. Like, Mulaney says one of Seinfeld's darkest jokes is the movie theater one where it's like, when people try to throw out their cups or whatever at the movie theater, it's like, no. The deal is, I open my hand, it drops, I walk out. Like, that's your job. Like, that's a dark joke. That's him being like, this is how society works.
Yeah. Right.
And people, like, it's like this, like, facade he puts on because he has so much fun telling these jokes and he goofs around a lot. So people think he's not dark.
And he doesn't stay in one area for too. I mean, he can exhaust any given subject, but he won't keep on talking about how these people who work there are, you know, lowest bar in society or whatever.
He makes his point and he moves on.
Fill in the blanks sort of on your own.
Yeah. Because I think he tries to make it be like he'll make fun of doctors, but he doesn't want to like be like the profession is bad. He just makes fun of what they do.
Yeah. He's very good at walking that line, it seems. So he doesn't want anyone to hate him.
Oh yeah.
He doesn't really make any enemies with anything.
Very
he does.
Few. I was telling a story today about like the one of the Seinfeld episodes, the Puerto Rican Day Parade, was very controversial. And they talk about how a lot of the controversy came just from the name, not even the episode itself. Because there's very few things other than the flag burning that's actually offensive. But George Shapiro, his manager, says right before we taped the special, were all these protesters outside the theater. And he goes, it was like very weird for Jerry. And Jerry walked right over and just started talking to these people.
Really?
And immediately they let down their guard. He was so nice to them. And he was like, hey, how's it going? Like, and just was like, thanks for coming. Like, just like really nice. And they were just immediately taken aback. And they were like, oh, this guy's not a mean person. He didn't mean any malicious intent. Because he talked to me, he's like, we didn't mean to offend people by that episode. It was literally just we picked a big event in New York that would cause traffic. So there's a lot of things that like Jared never means to mean malicious intent, but it does. But he is just very likable. I think that that's where I was going with that. Is like I think that he doesn't make a ton of enemies.
I feel like he's less likable these days.
This is a whole nother debate too. I mean, I could go on for hours because I know so much about Jerry, but he goes back and forth all the time. He'll do one interview where I get so mad at the things he's saying. And then he did one recently where he's like, stop going on the college comments. Like, I would never say that about colleges. They know what it is. He was talking about Hannah Gatsby's special being like, people are talking about it. That's what you want to do in stand up. And he's like, the audience decides. And if the audience is liking it, and like he's very progressive in it. And it's like
he's playing it safe too.
Like, I think so.
It sounds like he never really wants to give his whole opinion because he knows what a shitstorm that
he goes back and forth all the time. It is an interesting thing. I will say there's definitely times where I go as because he was my favorite growing up and stuff.
Right.
And I have many heroes who aren't liked by people anymore.
Well,
but
that seems to be very common in comedy. Like, it feels like people at a young age find certain things funny and they grow out of that. I'm talking about comedians, not audiences. But as they age, their point of view doesn't necessarily shift.
Yeah.
I see that in a lot of comedians. It seems that as they get older, like, oh, no, I'm like, can I not like you anymore? You seem detached from sort of where society is now.
Yeah.
But is it because you're afraid you can't make fun of the things that you used
or
to be able to?
Or is it because you're a millionaire
and
you don't live in this world?
Well, yeah. That's it, too. Like $15,000 on a Vespa.
Yeah, you're no longer in touch with everyday life. Yeah. Like, what's the deal with a portalette? You haven't been in a portalette
Well, in the episode of Comedians in Cars with Kevin Hart, they're driving past a shanty town and they're making jokes about the homeless.
Yeah.
And you're like, you're in a sports car,
kinda
man.
Punching down, guys.
Yeah.
You look like a total dick. Wild. Shithead. Yeah. You don't know anything about a shanty town. You know what the fuck's going on.
A little out of touch.
So, but I don't know, like, like what Chili's saying, I don't know how malicious any of that is. It's just
sort of ignorant.
At the beginning of this special, he's so sarcastic and like,
he doesn't, I think
but it's a lot of it is punching up.
The truth is, like, he just doesn't think a lot. I think he just wants to make people laugh, and that he's not caring. Like, one point he cares more about comedy than his kids or something like that.
Yeah, everybody says that. Roseanne Barr had that big thing about that too. Yeah, well, I guess she's got another one to quote now.
But
she must have done it better, clearly.
He says comedy is his number one thing. So he's not, he doesn't really have a conscience, which is a weird thing. Seinfeld's this like very positive person. He's like very, he's very happy in a lot of ways. And he
doesn't strike me as happy to me.
A lot of comedians talk about, like, Judd Apatow will say, like, you called Jerry Seinfeld, like, hey, how's it going?
Oh, yeah.
Like, he doesn't, but he doesn't suffer from
it.
I mean, I think it feels very much like a character, though. Like,
yes.
The character of Jerry is what we see on stage, whereas, like, because I've a lot of people have talked about, oh, he's been supportive and positive in personal dealings, but I think that comes back to that he doesn't put himself out on the stage.
He's a showman, man. He's always got a mask on, I think.
Really?
I don't know.
100% argue that.
No?
Especially since, I guess maybe it's him that's saying this, but he always argued that the art of stand-up comedy is the art of becoming yourself. So actors work so hard to dissolve, but he is himself.
I think this is a hot debate. Like, this is what people talk about. Hot debate.
Well, I don't think he will.
I don't know if anyone cares.
He doesn't want to reveal too much about himself, I don't think, to the world.
I bet you it's just because he doesn't find humor in it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, he could talk about his, well, that's the thing.
It's like he's always like,
this isn't funny. Who cares? It's way funnier to talk about raisins.
A lot. I don't care about the truth. Like, tell me a lot. I want to laugh.
Right. Yeah, I just need
to
lie at the end of this.
Like, I think it's an interesting debate. It's like, well, sometimes the truth is funnier than the lie. And that's where I sort of disagree with him in a sense. It's but sometimes, like, you were talking about some comedian the other day who you're like, you asked him what the real line was from
that
movie.
And the real one was funnier.
And you're like, the real one was funnier. And it's like, so why do people do this sometimes?
Yeah,
sometimes we force the lie. And then sometimes we go the other way where we're like,
do you know the example?
So
do you know
I can't remember. I think it's Freeborn, to be honest. Yeah, Jay Freeborn. I know this is not it's not throwing him under the bus at all or whatever. I think this is a cool thing. Yeah, because I talk about Kellett, my buddy Kellett does this all the time too, of like, if you're making up stories or whatever and I believe you and I'm in it or whatever, that's good. But if there's any fluctuation to the story, like, or if there's any part of me that's like, fuck off, like, get out of here, then I'm not going to trust you. And then as soon as you go into your next bit, you're already on wrong footing with me. You know what I mean?
No,
presenting it as
whatever sounds more sincere.
Right, exactly. And your story can be completely fake. Do you know the Woody Allen bit about the moose?
Refresh
that's an insane
me.
Story about he's like, I shot a moose in upstate New York and I strapped him to the front of my car and I didn't knock him out. I didn't kill him. I just knocked him out. And so he wakes up on the front of my car and he's like signaling for a turn. Like, it's obviously the craziest. Obviously, it didn't happen.
Yeah, sure.
But he's delivering it
so much
in such an insane way that there's no part of you, no one in the crowd is like, wait, what? Did that fucking happen? Get out of here.
Yeah, I mean, there's obtuse jokes, obviously, where the audience is like, oh, the idea for that was just for a punchline. He doesn't, she doesn't think that. We're trying, like,
that we're dumb enough to think it's true or something.
Yeah.
But some, what is the Freeborn joke? There's another joke that's a better example, I think. And I think it's Jake Leland's, where he goes, I talked to him about this. I was like, man, you're losing people on this. I feel, man.
Huh.
Where it's like, I was driving with my dad. We get cut off, and my dad goes, you fucking clown. And we see the guy pull over at a gas station or whatever, and out steps a clown. It's a guy in a clown outfit. And then we pull up behind him and my dad comes out and he beats the shit out of this clown and he takes the clown's nose and puts it on and he's like, who's funny now? So that's the job.
That's just a terrible story about a terrible man.
Well, exactly. Was, and then I'm like, wait a minute, your dad fucking beat the shit out of him. Yeah, the clown cool. thing is possible, and it is hilarious if that
but
happened.
The fact that he beats him for no reason.
Yeah, you gotta tell me about your fucking crazy dad, dude. Like, what the hell? Yeah. And so, but now that I don't believe that, the second half of that story, now I don't believe the clown thing. And now he goes into his next bit about whatever, and I'm like, I don't believe this either.
Fucking believe you brush your teeth.
There is a difference. Like, we talk about, like, what comedians believe and what audiences believe. Like, there's comedians who I'll watch and it's like, I don't believe a lick of that story.
Yeah,
like,
yeah,
you know, but audiences are loving
and crowds
it.
Crowds are eating it up. And, that's
and it, oh, like, it will grind my gears because I'm
really
like, another, I'm like, come on, like, that's, there's no way that.
But then there's someone, I mean, we don't say his name too often anymore, but Louis did a special.
Yeah.
And I remember I can't remember what the bit was, but he said, so Tuesday I was talking to this woman, or it was Thursday. It doesn't matter. It's not true. And then he kept going. And I was like, whoa, you just like. Before you even got to the punchline, revealed that this is not a true story, and I thought that
it
was
can
really
work the other
crazy.
Way though. There was a Albert Brooks's last appearance on Letterman. He like opens up. He goes, "I got a confession to make. She's been keeping me up all night. Like I was like calling my wife last night, and she's like, nobody's gonna care. I've been working in a studio. I haven't done anything, so I made up these stories. And then they're the most outrageous stories. Like, so
right,
I heard
sure.
you were buying a gun recently.
Yeah, sure,
so,
sure.
She just got back from the Amazon. And he tells this story, and like every beat's like, yeah, I shot a guy like in the sock aisle. Oh
right.
man, like, and it turns out he was a fan, so it's
so
okay.
That's part of the bit. It makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that like that really works. So again, it's like if you're doing the obtuse thing, it's fine.
Yeah, it also says it's like completely individual to the person and
sure.
how it sounds coming out of your mouth and stuff. You got Steve Martin on the wall here,
well,
man.
Yeah.
Like Steve Martin, so much of that is made up. Obviously.
Oh yeah, obviously.
Yeah, that's fine, and no one cares or whatever.
Right.
But if anyone else, if a more stoic person told a Steve Martin joke, you might be like, wait, what?
yeah,
like you actually think that your mom should die? Yeah, whatever.
Well, that's something we talk about sometimes.
Bit.
You know that bit?
No, I don't know.
My mom asked me for $5 for some food. I say, hey, I work for a living. Or it's like so over the top. That joke is great.
Yeah, it is great.
But if, I don't know, Jeselnik made that joke, you'd be like, whoa, what?
Right.
Like,
yeah. And that's a case of, I think the greatest comedians are the ones that their writing matches their voice.
100%.
Which we don't always see,
and
right?
I think Seinfeld's done a good job of being I am this, I guess. I don't know.
It sort of speaks to that when you tell you talk to somebody about Seinfeld, they immediately know the Seinfeld.
He's almost
not
a
just
genre.
It's a Seinfeldism, you know.
Yeah, yeah,
like,
yeah.
So, but you know, same with Steve Martin. He's kind of the same thing. But you talk about, I don't know, like, you know, I don't know, Patton Oswalt to an extent.
Right.
People, he's like, well, okay, is it early Patton Oswalt when he's a little bit darker, or is it later Patton Oswalt where he's got a little
this
bit more hope?
Way more
like,
confessional.
Yeah. It's like
but Jerry's pretty much Jerry everything he does.
Yeah.
It's crazy to me that he's only done like
three specials,
yeah. two
he
albums.
He's angrier now, I think. I feel like he's like young Jerry is way more like, this is crazy.
Yeah.
This is weird. And a
but
lot
now
of
he
Seinfeld
people.
Is.
He's impatient.
And now
yeah.
he's like, it is a lot darker. I still love a lot of it, but I do see it's like, he's not as likable as he was.
Well, because of all the privilege and riches he's had, I think. When you're talking, when someone's complaining to you and they're worth $950 million.
Yeah, but at the time of this special, he was worth a ton of money, too.
That's true.
You know what I mean?
No,
I don't
know. True.
But I mean, this material is material he'd been doing since forever. So he was born out of that hunger. And now it's like, you know, I only want to hang out with other comedians because they're the only ones who are going to understand me. So let's drive around in this vintage DeLorean. And talk shit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I got a little tired of that show. I really liked the inside baseball of it all and the talking of stories. But then after a while, I was just like, you guys are kind of patting yourselves on the back.
I've heard both. I think that it's a weird thing for me because it's such an interesting show where he says he's the same person all the time, but it literally seems like he's a different person in every episode. Like some episodes, I love him. Some episodes, I'm like, he's so funny. He's so cool. He keeps this show together. And then other episodes, I'm like, shut up. Like the Tracy Morgan episode this last season, he's like telling Tracy Tracy asks him questions. He gets like almost angry. And he's like, but then there's some like the Dana Carvey episode. They're just goofing around. It's awesome.
Yeah.
Like he's like giving, he's like giving Dana impressions to do, and like he just loves it. Like it's fun. The Alan one is fun. Kate McKinnon one. They're the Kate McKinnon one. They're like
they're
doing
silly
voices at the table and stuff.
I,
and it's
I don't
like
think
great.
You could have a bad time hanging out with Kate McKinnon.
Probably
you
know, not. Like, although it is funny, up. Someone made a great like point. It's like with both the Kate McKinnon and the Ellen DeGeneres, it's like he's never talked to a lesbian before. He asks questions about. It's like,
oh my gosh.
Men's penises or whatever. Yeah, no, they're like, what? But
he probably has no idea. I don't
do
know.
You
growing
wear
up
pants
in 1954,
to bed?
Like,
yeah, he's very. It's like he's just like, why?
Yeah, just be cool, man.
Yeah, yeah. Which he can be, and it's like it's weird because Jerry's so night and day for me, and he's such a big influence on me. So it's very interesting watching him.
He seems most comfortable when he's around people he genuinely thinks are very, very funny.
You can tell that in the show too.
Yeah.
You can tell.
You can tell he's not. I don't know, but I almost feel
there's a couple episodes where I'm like, well, like you like didn't riff or go like have any bits with this person at all, and then you see him with like Brian Regan, and he's just
they're
like
giggling like
oh
crazy
my
and
god,
stuff.
Like just goofing around and making fun of Flesh in the toilet, and like they're just talking about nothing because Jerry's at his best when he's talking about nothing.
Sure,
you know, I mean,
and as an interviewer,
thing.
I think he does best with someone else who's like sort of that born presenter who's always on, like him with Colbert was sort of the same thing. It's almost like they're co-hosting a show as opposed to having a conversation. I don't know how great he actually is at having a real conversation as
opposed
to
Letterman
co-hosting.
Is the same thing. David Letterman, he did one for the Netflix series, and there's so many
funny
things.
Oh, that one
and
is
David
wicked.
Letterman
that
calls
interview
him out
rules.
On his bluff a couple times, and he calls Letterman out on his bluff. Like, they're both like making fun of each other's, like, because David Letterman is so humble now, and Jerry's a little like cocky, so they both kind of like make fun of each other.
But clearly, old friends like super comfortable with each other.
Yeah, and they both have so much respect.
They have a shorthand that like almost no other two people in the world have.
Yeah.
Like it just they've shared this weird experience together.
Yeah.
It's
interesting.
It's,
I mean that's a nice thing about some of those episodes of Comedian in Cars.
True.
Is sometimes you just see them with old pals, and it's like just fun to watch old pals riff. Like the
Leno
know,
one's good.
The
too,
Michael Richards
Leno
one
really
is so
good.
Great.
Yeah,
like,
yeah, that one is too.
I mean, that one is one of my favorites, and I'm like, it's probably people like I can't watch it, but it's there's so many funny things and emotional things that happen in that episode. That's like, whoa.
Some of them are where you could tell he's in a bad mood the day that they're recording it. You're like, the Barney Mater one or whatever. That one.
Yeah, there's
from
some,
the first season. You're like, oh man,
Jesus.
Like,
he's short with people.
I hate when he's like,
but it's not
explaining how to do comedy to people. It's like you brought them on the show because you respect them.
Yeah.
And so why are you? Yeah. And it's great when some people like he almost makes a sort of sexist joke with John Mulaney and John Mulaney like about John Mulaney's wife and John Mulaney like shuts it down.
Oh, good.
It's like,
wait,
it's like, attaboy, John.
John Mulaney feels like to me modern comedic sensibilities of being vulnerable mixed with that
Jerry
Seinfeld
amazing joke writer.
He's obviously he's been influenced by Jerry but like
for sure
but he's also very vulnerable but he also seems to keep us at a distance.
I think John Mulaney is lower status as this is like an improv point of view I guess too or whatever like but it would be bizarre if John Mulaney was as cocky, I guess, as Jerry.
Yeah, I mean, he can be. He can be dark and mean, too.
Right, exactly. But
he also takes himself down quite a bit.
Right,
too.
The light bulb in your head that goes off when you think of John Mulaney is like,
the
little
crashing
boy.
Episode
you know
they did
mean?
With him this season where he like played a dick because like they got the wrong. It was supposed to be Ben Holmes as the opener, not Pete Holmes.
Oh, okay.
And then Pete Holmes makes fun of how he's a dick, and he's like, sometimes we're all a dick sometimes. And it's like, that's how you are in this business. It was a big show and he got the wrong person and he didn't treat me very well, but like that's the reality. And it's like an interesting take on that. I'd like Crashing a lot. I think.
Yeah. I gotta watch
for
more
comedians.
That.
It's
season three out already.
Yeah. Just finished.
Oh wow.
I didn't even watch it. Oops,
I'm behind.
Apatow said they're done now.
Oh, they're done.
He's like,
oh,
he's not gonna make more, but HBO said, please don't make any more.
Really?
Please don't make any more.
We're not canceled. We'll go to Showtime.
Please don't return.
Please don't
so we can get Undying up here back on the air. Come on.
I didn't like that show as much.
I know.
It was okay. I was okay.
But they set up so much shit at the end of the second season.
Such nerds.
Dorks.
No, totally. No.
Fun, I know comedians who can't watch those shows. Like
I know,
They're like it's like
too
so
dramatic.
Real.
It's but too like
I sometimes I get so wrapped up in it because I love the world as much as I
Like
what did you guys think of the Birbiglia movie?
I liked it a lot. Don't Think Twice.
Don't Think Twice.
But I talked to a lot of improvisers. I loved it.
I really liked it. There's a conflict with like. It's very much made like obviously if it was just made for improvisers it would be a better movie. There's examples and stuff in it that you're like, oh, this is just to communicate to the real world what it's like, if how awkward a situation this would be.
Yeah, but it feels like they took the worst people from a bunch of different troops and somehow put them all in one, and they
one character that's super likable, and that's because, and I also, not just because I've been in love with her for a long time, but the Gillian Jacobs character.
Oh, Gillian.
Because the end, she's like, she just keeps doing this because she loves doing it. Yeah. Like, there's that actually one of my favorite scenes is towards the end where she's doing the scene and he like comes in and she's like, no, I don't want to come to Weekend Live or whatever.
Right.
Like all that show. She's like, I just love doing it. And I talked to a buddy of mine. He's like, yeah, that's one of the few characters I did relate to in that movie. Mm. It was like, I just love doing improv.
But like every single person in that cast was a really good improviser. So, you know, it's like, it's not just like an actor playing an improviser. These are all people like are from UCB and Second City. Sure. It's they're like, they probably know a person who was that person.
Kind of
person.
Absolutely. Yeah. I think that like some of the improvisers were like that I know were like it was almost hard to watch because some of it hit too hard on the head. And like obviously the most cringeworthy thing is the Birbiglia character.
Oh my god!
Hooking up with his student, which
Well, which you just see a lot, I'm sure. Like, you know what I mean?
I'm
like,
sure it used to happen a lot more than it does
right,
now.
Right? Exactly.
Like,
that's what
these places
I'm like,
create
you read
rules for those
thing
types of things.
Yeah. Plus, his character was just so bitter all the time too.
You can imagine that person as well.
I think that there's definitely good things and bad things. I loved it when I first watched it. The other thing to me is there's so many friggin' stand-up movies. And we don't see a lot of improv movies. Yeah. And like that's a really
nice other world.
I'm so sad
that the Del Close movie isn't getting made.
Mike Myers was going to be
Del Close, and then the funding got pulled, and Mike Myers was like, I got a career.
Hurts,
I got a walk.
I got a career.
And I mean,
the book is good.
He's on the Kevin MacDonald podcast talking about how he used to hang out with Del Close back in Chicago, and just like this time when he went to like a party and was reading Del Close's horoscope, like doing tarot cards, but it was hockey cards.
Okay,
and it's just like, so this is a guy who like is intimately knowledgeable of this life, like he could be him, and like, you know, Del Close is like one of those people, like Lorne Michaels, everybody who's worked for him has an impersonation, or worked with him has an impersonation of him because he's such a huge character. That would have been really revelatory to have
that
as a
great
movie.
Like I had a blast watching the Doug Kenny movie with Will Forte and stuff. I thought there was a lot of funny and like cool, like John Lennon as Michael O'Donoghue was awesome. Like that, he just nailed that so well. And like, I mean, unfortunately we didn't see enough of it, but who better to play Chevy Chase than Joel McHale, a guy who's like a huge fan of him and then worked so closely with
him. That movie didn't work too well for me, man.
You didn't like that one as much?
No, I didn't like it. Okay. I didn't like McHale as Chevy Chase.
I thought it would be better because he knew him so well. But I guess the point was the movie wasn't about him. It was about Doug Kenny.
Right.
They just put him in because he was Doug Kenny's like best friend.
Yeah, it was an interesting movie. I feel like it was trying to be too many things.
Right.
Like it was sort of almost a docudrama, but also wanted to be a comedy.
Right.
And I don't think it really succeeded it either.
Right.
It just felt a little messy to me.
Yeah.
But it was interesting story.
But in a way that's almost kind of representational of the
Lampoon. No, that's not good enough. Not good enough. No, it has to be good.
Did you watch the National Lampoon documentary before?
What's the name of that?
It's called Drunk, Stone, Dead, Brilliant.
Yeah.
And it actually makes the movie better because you get so many more little tidbits and references that they talk about in the documentary. Because obviously I didn't grow up with National Lampoon. I'm so much younger than that, other than the films I know, but I didn't read the books or the magazines.
Is that on Netflix? Does anybody know the
documentary?
I'll have to hunt for that.
Yeah.
But the other one is, and what's it called again?
What's the movie called?
The one with Will Forte.
The movie is called A Futile and Stupid Gesture.
A Futile and Stupid Gesture. Yeah. That's right. Yeah.
Yeah, which is the line from Animal House.
I still haven't seen that. Yeah.
Yeah.
We need a futile and stupid gesture.
Yeah.
I don't know. I liked a lot. Will Forte.
Did you like Birbiglia's first movie? Sleepwalk With Me?
I still haven't seen
that. Changed my whole life.
It's fantastic.
That movie's nuts. I liked that movie way more than Don't Think Twice.
Really?
Yeah.
We should do a Birbiglia episode sometime, but after
he's an interesting
Sleepwalk
stand-up,
with me.
For sure.
Man.
I'm not sure how
so
I feel
bizarre,
about
it.
I like him and dislike him at the same time.
You have to be in the mood for it.
He's
it's like
so
a meal.
Calculated. It's like, and then I did this.
It's like pretty wild storytelling versus
it's almost
jokes.
A TED Talk.
I like both dislike him. It's a weird
thing. His first movie was basically a dramatization of a
of a moth, play or something.
Well, it's like a moth storytelling thing that then became an This American Life episode. Then This American Life produced it as a movie. Mm-hmm. And it's like, you know, when Ira Glass is one of your executive producers, there's going to be a little bit of artifice going on with this situation.
Yeah.
Mark Maron's in it too, I think, or something. There's cool parts of him getting on the road for the first time. And it's like, and I don't know. So a lot of those stories are relatable as a stand up or whatever. Mm-hmm. And just like him, the relationship troubles he's having and him trying to make it work. And it's just not right. And they're staying in this relationship. That's like,
my
buddies and I have, Jordan Voisey and I wanted to watch that movie and drink every time we related.
Like, oh no.
That would kill you. You mentioned Maron. He's an interesting cat to think about, who was sort of coming up parallel to Seinfeld,
but does not
different.
I don't think he doesn't like him as a person. I don't think that Maron's now, he's way more mellowed out, that he doesn't have any negativity towards people. But he talks about, like, I've heard him multiple times on his podcast say that he can't watch Seinfeld. He's like, there's nothing, there's no vulnerability. He talks about all, like,
feels formulaic.
And I mean, I haven't watched a lot of Maron stand up. I like him.
I mean, some people hate him too.
His book is fucking wicked. Yeah.
But
his book is great.
I think, like, I respect the opinion. Lots of people don't like Seinfeld and they're my friends, and that's okay.
Sure.
But you can't help but what makes you laugh. You know what I mean?
Totally. Like, I mean, I always felt like Maron was sort of an underdog that I kind of wanted to root for. He seemed like, I was always aware of him, but everybody else who was his peer was sort of doing better than him somehow. But I mean, that's part of his narrative too. I mean, he's doing okay.
I think he also realized that like,
since his podcast empire launched,
bitterness kills you. He gets so much that, like, it's weird listening to him now because he's such a nice guy now.
Right.
But
there's like a long time where he was
people that won't talk to him anymore. And that's huge.
If, like, during the entire Jon Stewart thing where he's like, you know, you want to say you're sorry, but you only want to do it on the podcast.
Yeah.
And, like,
Adam Sandler will never talk to him again, I don't think. Yeah. But there's a couple of people. He's made up with a few people, but but you burn that many bridges. Like, he did it to himself a lot, and I don't want to say that.
I mean, he's the first person to admit that he's done it to himself, which makes me feel as genuine. Any remorse that he has feels genuine, because he's like, I did this. This is my fault. I was wrong.
Yeah.
And that feels real to me. I think
the nice thing now is he gives a lot of people opportunities to do that on the podcast and stuff.
Yeah.
Like, he talked to Robin Williams with that type of thing.
Oh, man. Gallagher, that's such a great episode.
People.
That Gallagher episode is intense.
Wow. I haven't listened to the whole thing. I listened like first half and I was like,
Gallagher walks out. Yeah. He loses his shit and walks out. Yeah.
Talked about if he'll have Seinfeld on the show, or is he like, is that someone he wouldn't have? I think
there's certain people I'd love, like Seinfeld would be
It'd be great to hear Seinfeld.
I'd love to hear Chevy Chase on it. I think that would be so interesting because of the relationship he has with Chevy Chase from the roast and stuff like that. Because there's so many people I'd love to just hear them, like, talk for an hour.
Kidding. Like, and that's a great platform.
You get vulnerable. And Seinfeld would get so vulnerable. Like,
that'd be really cool.
Norm MacDonald is even vulnerable. Like,
talking about his gambling addiction.
The Mike Myers episode too is fantastic.
So do you guys think, you know, looking at Mark Maron and Jerry like people cut sort of like on a parallel track as far as when they were working on their career, do you think, you know, in a way Jerry's type of material is no longer the sort of the what the public demands, whereas Maron's on the rise because people want that intimacy and vulnerability?
It's interesting because I don't know if Maron's on the rise, but
I don't think so either.
I sort of see what you're saying.
Maron.
The style.
You know,
appeal to different people.
I think one interesting thing too, and it would be cool to get your opinion on this, Julia, of like, I've noticed that a lot of Netflix specials now are not even like formulated like special, you know what I mean? Unless it matches like the person, like Neil Brennan's thing of Three Mics is like, well, I can't even just go up and do comedy for an hour. Like, that's not even what the public wants anymore, you know what I mean? I have to give it a format.
It's interesting,
or like, Baby with Maria Bamford or whatever.
Like, it's comics, if they're not in the moment, it's not interesting anymore if you're not there and present. And Seinfeld is not really, I mean, he makes very few. He can, if something happens, he's able to riff on it because he's been doing this for so long, obviously.
Right.
But he's not.
You're talking about with the crowd or whatever.
Like Pete Holmes does make it's like if you go up on stage and you're kind of like in your own world and just doing your jokes, then, you know, audiences don't respond as much anymore. And I think that's true to an extent. I think if you're still a great joke writer, like, I think we have.
Well, yeah, Mulaney's very, to be like, just going.
A lot of our friends.
But he'll have an aside opposite. Here and there, you know, like something will pop in Mulaney's head where it seems like where he'll let it out or something. Whereas or Jerry, it feels almost like a tape recording.
I would argue. Oh, really? I feel Mulaney's. But I don't have a problem with these tape recording people. Because just do whatever the hell seems to be what you want to do and what the public seems to be wanting of you. You know what I mean? Like, it's just working. But like, it would almost be insane to me if next year Seinfeld popped out a special that was so deep about his family.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I don't want to hear anything. I'd almost, like, I'd
listen,
even more
what am I going to tell you?
I've
had a rough day. Like, it turns into Richard Lewis or something.
Sort of, you know what I mean? Like, that would be insane. But also, it'd be bizarre if Rory Scovel came up and did a very calculated hour. You'd be like, what the hell? Where's the person I wanted to see?
What a great experiment if these guys switched styles or something.
But it would also be terrible. I don't think the crowd would want that.
You speak to your voice.
Yeah. But also, and you talk about like classic versus like nowadays people want something more intimate. I don't know if that's necessarily true at all. When you listen to fucking in the 1977 Richard Pryor Live on Sunset Strip.
Well, that's pure intimacy.
That's
right,
crazy
there.
Intimacy. Yeah. You know what I mean? That's as real and it's personal and stuff. And but you wanted that from Richard Pryor because he was good
that
at
that.
That
was also very groundbreaking too.
It was
something that we weren't used to hearing,
It kind of felt like
Lenny before him and stuff. And Lenny was talking about personal stuff, but Lenny wasn't as good at it as Pryor. But he was kind of the first person to sort of do it.
Right,
let's talk about me.
But I'm a rarity in that I love George Carlin's early stuff, and we get farther and farther.
You are a rarity. That's crazy. No one says that.
I like the AM side of AM/FM. I just listen to that record all the time, my dad. And like the Divorce Game Show is one of the most like perfect bits ever. Wow.
Have you heard the album that he did at the Playboy Club? It was like the Tim and
I've heard pieces like the radio. Is that the one with the Wonderful Wino?
No, this predates that. Him and he's still in a duo, and I'm completely blanking.
Jack Burns, right?
Yeah. Playboy Club, and it's like
his first album.
Can't believe this is like. This is George Carlin, like this, and that's a case of a person who's like you know really evolved as a voice.
So Chili,
I don't like the poetry; it's just not for me.
But do you like the Hippy Dippy Weatherman stuff?
I love Hippy Dippy Weatherman.
Yeah. Oh wow! Weird.
I like Seven Words is fine. But to me also like the baseball bit, which was like when he did for TV. He did it on SNL. He did it on Letterman in the 90s again. The
baseball bit is amazing. Football or whatever.
And like some of those bits I do love that. But then like the stuff he was doing in the 2010s where he was like, this is the consumer's poem. It's like I don't want to hear this.
He was dead.
Not 2010, but like I guess mid 2000s.
Right. Yeah.
And
Modern
it was
Man?
Like it was
Modern
like
Man is good. You don't like
I
don't
his
like
90s
that,
stuff,
so.
Man. Like it was
jamming in New York.
Yeah, like borderline into that poetry stuff. Like it would just be lists, but like just so I don't know how he memorizes the rhythm of all that and like gets it out so well. But it's also very
like
clever.
Stuff.
I love that stuff.
That, to me, like
I don't like the hey man. You know,
I love
mean?
It.
Like,
I love the character
for me.
I love
yeah,
it.
You
Wonderful Wino is so like the up and down of it. It's so perfectly made. The punchlines are there.
That was one of because I sort of listen a lot of Dr. Demento and he play that one a lot.
Right. Yeah.
On there, so that's like my almost burnt into my. Early formative comedy mind like that kind of stuff.
And he hates it. One of the things I read Last Words recently, which was one of his books. And
I liked Last Words.
And there's a lot of things I like about Last Words, but he's so adamant on like he's such a hater on things. Like he hates formulaic, he hates Hollywood, and to a point where it's like that's almost like I feel like it's unhealthy. Like it's like he just hated things. Like he called Lorne Michaels a cocksucker. He's like, that guy's a head over heels cocksucker, like just fake Hollywood, fake. So he moves so far away and it's like, yeah, but there's, you know, sometimes that stuff is great. Sometimes the stuff where it's like, it's just so tailor-made just to make you laugh. And it's just like, it's like good. And that's fun stuff. Like I loved Get Smart as a kid. Get Smart is such a fantastic show. In a sense, there's so much formula in that. And it's it was sort of originating that formula. So maybe that makes it a better thing. But you know, not to say that I still watch the formulaic sitcoms. Like, there's a lot out that I don't like. But
it's the most popular thing out there. Anything formulaic with a like same with their pop music, man. It's like the same four chords.
It's marketable because you know it'll sell.
Exactly. Anything familiar, the public will buy. The lowest common denominator likes the thing that they're used to.
But I mean, there's an art to a pop song that takes some serious talent manufacture. Just like there's art to a person who's making that like right down the middle perfect. Yeah. Joke, which is like I think kind of what Seinfeld does, is he captures that pop comedy sensibility of I'm gonna be dark enough that I'm happy with the darkness here, but I'm gonna just keep it accessible enough that everybody can get a laugh. Like, because this is 1998 coming out of a show.
It's interesting because Carlin is his idol in so many ways. It's sort of like the Letterman Carson thing where it's like they're so different yet they idolize that person. And I think they both have mutual respect. Like, I think Carlin likes Seinfeld, and I think obviously Carson liked Letterman.
Well, I mean, Carlin was in the opening bit of the special. Which, and that lineup of comedians was like just 1998 comedy.
All straight white guys, but
Paralee in there.
That's right.
Jerry's friend George Wallace. Both of those people he adored.
Paul Reiser, many people don't think Paul Reiser as a comedian is like, the brown brick wall of like comedy shows in the 80s and 90s where I'm like, that's how I knew him. And it's like where my sister, what, you guy from Mad About You? No, he was a comedian.
He'd be good on Comedians in Cars.
Oh, it'd be amazing. Yeah,
he would be good.
There was an opening. One great thing about this special too, coming back to the special.
Yeah, why not?
Is the amount of time you could tell of like attempts and stuff, like that boron joke off the top.
Right.
We were talking about this, and he said this before about how many different elements he went through the periodic table.
Oh, really?
Because boron is just a funny word. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I think he tried other elements, and they weren't funny enough.
Yeah,
test them in front of that crowd.
When I was in a sketch troupe, we would write different things, and we had a couple people who were newer to comedy in the troupe as well. And I remember they said, they wrote something that was like, I've got 15 shoes or something like that, or 16 shoes. And I said, say 17. And they're like, why? And like three of us went, 17's funnier.
17 is a funnier number. Odd numbers are funnier.
Odd numbers
are
funnier, yeah.
I don't know why.
But 17 is also better than 15, because 15's too round.
Yeah, it is round.
It's divisible by
17 is like,
and 7 is a longer
where's
number.
Where's that 18th shoe?
Yeah, there is.
Consciously, you don't register it. Subconsciously.
That happens with any odd number, yeah. But
the Steve Martin joke of... he's watching a Vegas show, and he's like, look at all the tits. There must be 57 tits on that stage.
That's so great. And then Homer Simpson borrowed that later for spring break. Marge, guess how many boobs I saw today? 15. 17 would have been better. I also was
call
reminded
the
of the
writer?
Simpsons. I mean, we could do Simpsons references all day. But when he was talking about the Halloween costume and the mask and stuff, I love the part. When in The Simpsons one time Milhouse had a radioactive costume and Lisa says, what are you supposed to be? She says, I'm Radioactive Man. I don't think Radioactive Man wears a plastic smock with his own picture on it. And then Milhouse says, on Halloween he would. That's such a great joke. I remember I had a Scooby-Doo costume and it was that stupid plastic brown the face of Scooby-Doo, and then he had that terrible elastic in the staple, and then a yellow and red smock that had a picture of Shaggy and Scooby-Doo in red on yellow.
Aww.
And it said Scooby-Doo, and to me that made no sense.
Yeah, why would he even have
this? Just give me a brown smock. That would have been way
better. I think
better.
That's such a good testament to Seinfeld, is that he has purposely picked so many things over the years that he doesn't feel are going to change.
It's true. Yeah.
Like, he talks about, like, he never wanted to make the show Seinfeld, like, become, like, yellow, like, and which is a weird description of it. Like, I don't want this weird show that people are like, what is this?
Yeah.
Like,
right.
So many of the topics on that show, like, we're talking today, like, there's about three or four that don't hold up, and then the rest are, like, timeless. And you can watch that show, and so many of those bits... Maybe you don't live that lifestyle, but like you were just talking, and you're significantly younger than Jerry Seinfeld, and you can still relate to that bit of like the mask, and that's great.
Yeah. For me, it was the hobo costume, because I still have memories of my dad getting a cork out of a bottle of wine that he had just finished and burning the end and half-assed putting on a beard with the burnt cork and then sending me there's your Halloween costume.
Yeah, even if it's not the exact same experience, he finds
things that aren't the time.
He
finds things that are like, oh, this has been happening for a while, and I don't see this changing. I don't see them changing the staple and the thing. And like, obviously they could change some of it, but a lot of it's like, they still turn the light on in the bathroom when you go to the airplane. Like, they still point that way in an airplane. In the video, you won't see this in the audio, but he does this whole pointing bit where he's like, what is this vague pointing? Like, I'm getting out before you're
There's really
out.
Nothing on there that, like, a 14-year-old would hear now and not understand, I don't think.
Well, that's the thing. And, like, my relationship with this special is interesting because this is the first special I'd ever watched. And I was young. I was maybe like 9 or 10 when I first saw this special. Right. I started watching Seinfeld like in the first grade. And I remember just seeing this special. And there's so many goofy things. There's so many, like the cow bit about the expiry date. I got that so young. Yeah. So many Seinfeld things I got as a kid. So many things I didn't get as well. But there was so much relatability to it. Like, he's got a perfect level of like silliness and stuff. And
very surface level. You can explain a concept so easily, so quickly and cleanly.
I used to watch it over and over again and just watch his cadence and be like, I like that. I like that.
So funny. The swears.
It's so interesting to watch as a kid.
And he doesn't waste any words. He's not a rambler in any way. Like, it's very economical.
It's like, even if you don't like him, he is someone. He's a wordsmith. I just think you should watch him. Like, a friend of mine, when we saw him live a couple of years ago, was like, I didn't really like him, but he's also, I'm glad I watched him because you can see why he was good.
Everyone respects him, I think, whether they like him or not.
It's kind of like Rush to me. I don't like Rush, but I'm like,
this is undeniably good.
They are incredible musicians.
Whatever this
who are
is,
totally
they're good
cracked.
At it.
Yeah. I don't mind that all these people seem into it or whatever. I don't know.
It's so good. And it's so, he's just a wordsmith. And like, he just knows how to get the most out of every joke. Like, and just like, beat it to death, for lack of a better term. Like, he just beats the joke. It's good. He moves on.
Did you hear the thing about how he used to, I don't know how true this is, but he used to look at his act word for word and then try to take out a word every day? Every time he did a show, he tried to take out a word to make it more efficient.
Yeah.
And stuff.
Yeah.
I like that.
Oh, it's a great way to work. That'd be a neat sort
it's
of.
It's also like OCD as hell. Like,
that'd be a fun night of comedy, like to do like an experimental either sketch or stand up where you do it like every night for a week or something, but every night the challenge is you have to take a couple words out or something.
I don't know if I've ever been like, I'm fairly calculated. I'm not as calculated as you.
I try to,
but I like, I've recently realized that when I do stand up, I'm so like, I need to be a little loose or it won't work. If I get too in my head,
because
I'm an improviser as well, and I riff with the audience and things like that. And the best nights I have in stand up are ones where I'm loose.
Right.
And it's the same with sketch, even though I do write the sketch to it, it's like, if I'm being loose up there and I'm not so overly touchy on the word, which is funny because I'm such a Seinfeld fan, I don't do as well. And I think when I started, I was way more like that. And I was almost doing it.
I'm like that with sketch. I like it word for word. I like writing the jokes to be very precise. I enjoy wordy stuff like that. My favorite guy on Saturday Night Live is always Aykroyd, because he could just memorize huge swaths of words. Yeah. And it was so specific. Yeah. And not everyone can do that.
Well, you were talking about Aykroyd, like you guys on the Saturday Night Live podcast.
That's right.
And, and just his ability to create characters and words. Like, I think, you know, he wasn't my favorite, but I think talent wise, Aykroyd was the best in those early years.
I agree. Yeah.
Tremendous characters, tremendous impressions. Just,
he was like 23 years old too.
And like,
super young.
He was not the most likable necessarily, or not the most, you know, physical, whatever, but just his way of like creating it.
He was the best pitch man. Like, I loved all his commercials. He was incredible.
Yeah.
All right, guys. Well, thanks so much for coming in and talking to us about Jerry Seinfeld, and telling you for the last time. You guys have any final thoughts? Who would be the modern Jerry Seinfeld?
I think Mulaney was the best.
Yeah, I guess you touched on that.
You know, Regan is a little bit younger. I don't know if he would be considered modern, but he's definitely like, that's the closest in terms of like the monologue style. But
there's still a place for this style of comedy though.
Yeah.
Well, it's accessible. I think it's also just the individual of like, you just do whatever the hell you do that you seem to like doing or whatever.
Because
it's like talking about like, who's the next blank or whatever. And you're like, I don't know. I'm just me, man. Like, just did you read the article about Jordan Peele or whatever? It's like all these people being like,
yeah,
he's the next Spielberg.
No, right. Like, no, he's just Jordan Peele.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
He's just a guy. Now, why do we always have to put someone on the map as someone?
On the next whatever.
It's, but, you know, I do have a big respect. I think the place where I kind of came from is like my biggest respect is for comedians whose only objective is to make you laugh. Mm-hmm. And it's like sort of like that Norm Macdonald thing. It's like whenever you're trying, like, just, you know, laugh. And not to say that, and it, that doesn't mean that there's not a market for other people. I don't respect it.
But do comedians lose sight of that? Do you think some people have a different motivation than
lose
that?
Sight. I think
wonder
that
if people try to become, they're like, well, I need, I can't do this because this person already kind of does that or whatever. You know what I mean? Where it's like,
try to
but
create
if you're
it.
You, and this is an old Keith Johnstone thing or whatever. Do you know Keith Johnstone, the improviser?
No.
And he's an improv teacher or whatever. He's like, he invented the life game and all this kind of stuff.
Oh, okay.
He had a great thing about when you're trying to be original, if I'm like, give me 5 original ideas on my desk in the morning, your brain would go to the same place that everyone else's brain does when you're trying to be original, quote unquote. And then, in fact, the most original thing you could do is be you, because nobody's you. You know what I mean? So
even if you're a little bit like somebody else, it still comes from a genuine place.
You might think it sounds like somebody else, but it is you.
You can't really fairly judge.
Yeah, but there is a different that, like, a lot of people are looking. Like, I do think a lot of people look for personality over jokes nowadays, which I get to a certain extent. The world needs sometimes the different points of view, and you can't just be the joke guy. But I do love watching a Norm Macdonald special where it's just like those jokes are just so friggin' good. It's really nice sometimes to watch those specials where you just watch a Brian Regan and it's like, you know, he's like, he's not the most, you know, deep person in the world, but I laugh my butt off when I watch these things.
Well, we're spoiled for content now.
It's the best version of that, like the Sandler special too.
Yeah.
But even though the Sandler special was all jokes and the Norm special is all jokes, it still sounds different because they're different people. Right. You know what I mean?
Yeah, so, I mean, Norm's never going to do what Sandler does. And
exactly.
Sandler's never
going to
do what Norm
and
does.
And also, like, Hannah Gatsby or whatever, like, you do you, and that's important as well.
Yeah,
you
know? There's
like,
absolutely a market for that. Yeah. I do think that, but I just, like, I also think, like, there's always a market for... And it's interesting because it was like the Billy Crystal thing of, like, he got advice early on of, like, you should do... more you and less impressions and stuff up there. And Jim Carrey did this, right, where he decided to drop all the impressions. And I agree with it to an extent, but I also have always loved watching Dana Carvey, and he's more of a sketch guy on stage. And, you know, his special is so opposite of being deep. And I don't think his special is necessarily the best thing he's ever done, but I do love watching him do characters and impressions.
Like, well, and there's room for all of it, which is great. And we have, now that we have Netflix and different things like that, I mean, basically whatever you're in the mood for.
And I think that's great too. And I like when I produce shows, it's always like, let's try to get a little bit of everything up there.
Let's not all aim to be this one style. It's not like that anymore.
You can be an observational guy. You can be a personal guy. And we still like all of it, you know, tell your story. And that's, you know, the great thing about the world nowadays is that because of the, you know, people come from different backgrounds and we're like, great, like, let's put you on stage. And, you know, but I do think that people still love Jerry. And I think that so much of it, and that's why I'm sort of bummed that he didn't do a special of some of his new bits, because he does have some things
that are great. Yeah, good job.
Not just the
maybe next year.
Joke.
Never too late.
Yeah, I got rid of that. I think maybe.
Which is not that good of a joke. It's a bad. The gay king joke is like a bad joke. I don't know why he would ever even defend it. Like, he's got so many bad jokes.
Yeah, he's got so many jokes.
Right.
Anyway, whatever.
Whatever. Well, guys, where can we find you guys on Twitter and stuff like that?
Man.
If people want to see you making jokes online, where would we find you, Mark?
You'd have to look. Fuck you, okay? Audience. No.
Hallworth Mark.
Yeah, that's my handle for Twitter
and
Instagram.
What about you, Chili?
ChiliDog44, Instagram, Twitter. follow my sketch show, Freakin' the Beats, on Instagram. We're hot and we're popping right now.
Awesome. Hot and popping.
And we'll go see you at Pay What You Can't. And we'll see Mark's
Come on, Dan, come up to sing at another bar. To Comedy Last at Social Capital Theater as well. That's always the second Saturday of the month.
There you go.
Talk about that. Right. That's a fun time
These
as well.
You guys are busy. Awesome. Yeah, man. And you can find Matt and I right here at Comedy Album Book Club. Thanks again for listening. See you next time.
Bye.
Save big money when you start your next project today at Menards. Convert your current recessed lighting with energy-saving LED downlights from Fight Electric. They're bright and install easily in just minutes. They also go from regular lighting to nightlight mode with just a simple flip of a switch. Save big on all Fight lighting products now at Menards. Shop our lighting options today in-store and on Menards.com. Save big.